From the Land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 14th day of May 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. And we'll discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Dave Dickey will have today's agricultural news. And I'll tell you about an interesting press conference I listened to over the noon hour today as it dealt with the RFS, the biomass-based diesel proposals, and a tax extension for soy diesel. And it all comes up during this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report right here from Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for a Wednesday afternoon. Nearby May wheat at $6.81 a bushel, down 19 cents today. July, the harvest month for the soft red, at $6.90 and a quarter, 19 cents lower as well. Hard red July down 18 and a half, $8.06 and a quarter, the settlement price at the CME Group in Chicago. May corn futures at 494 and three quarters, 8 and a half lower. July at 495 and a half, down 7 and a quarter. And September corn, $4.90 and three quarters, 5 and three quarters lower. December futures at 489, down 6. And the March corn at $4.97, down 6 for the day. May futures at 503, that finished down 6 as well. May beans at $14.96 at a quarter, down 6. July down, or rather up 3 at 1486 and three quarters in the bean pit. August futures $14.16, 1/2 cent higher. And September at $12.77 a bushel, up a quarter. November beans, the harvest month, $12.22 and a half, 3 and a half higher. January, $12.28 and three quarters, up 3 and a quarter for the day. Bean meal at $4.97.90, up 20 cents. Bean oil at $41.19, 19 higher. Live cattle futures finished up the June at $137.45, 45 cents higher. August at $138.40, up 55 cents for 100 pounds. May feeder cattle at $185.40, that finished 67 and a half higher in the August at $192.45, up 77 and a half. And lean hogs at $120.57 and a half cents in the June, 97 and a half cents higher. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. Find us online at willag.org. We come to you from the University of Illinois and Illinois Public Media. Again, the address, willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day, June contract, $102.15 a barrel, up 45 cents. RBOB gasoline, or the wholesale price, 3 9/10 cents higher at $2.96 9/10 a gallon. And the ethanol futures at $2.16 2/10, up 2 9/10, and the spread between the two is 80 7/10 cents wide. That's a penny wider than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $4.38, up 2 2/10, and diesel fuel for the day at $2.96 2/10, a penny and 8/10 higher. Gold futures at $1,305.90, up $11.10. And the U.S. dollar at 80.07. That's down 0.06 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Occasional showers, a high of just 56 degrees on a northeast wind today. At about 14 miles an hour, that'll gust all the way to 21. The chance of rainfall for this afternoon is set at 80% in the area. And then tonight, occasional showers, a low of 45. North-northwest winds at about 16 miles an hour, gusting to 23. A 90% chance of rainfall Thursday. Occasional showers before 8 a.m. Otherwise, a high of 57 degrees on a north-northwest wind at 13 to 17, gusting to 26. A 90% chance of showers overnight and into the 8 a.m. hour. On Thursday night, a 50% chance of rainfall, mostly cloudy, and a low of 40. Friday, again, a 50% chance of showers, mostly cloudy, and a high near 56. The winds will turn to the southwest by then at 5 to 11 miles an hour, and a 50% chance of showers before 8 p.m. on Friday night will bring us to a low of a chilly 39 degrees. Saturday, mostly sunny skies and 59. Saturday night, partly cloudy and 43. And on Sunday, sunny skies and 65 degrees, mostly clear Sunday night, and 47. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for agricultural information on WILL comes from Busey. With over 145 years of agribusiness experience, Busey's team is committed to providing resources to today's producers. Busey, your dream, our promise.
On the phone line with us this afternoon for this 14th day of May 2014, from Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County, is Jackie Vakes to take a look at the futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Was it a quiet day in Chicago or not?
Well, I think, it was a mostly negative day in Chicago until you got to the bean market at the end of the day, where the beans ended up in the higher end, and corn actually ended up, right down by its lows without much help, and wheat pretty much stayed the same. I think we saw a lot of spread unwinding in between wheat and corn today, and that supported corn until the very bitter end, it seemed like, and so it was quiet, yes. We had May contracts go off kind of with a whisper. I thought it was, when you look at the general picture, May corn went off 27 and a quarter cents higher than we had in March. Beans $1.09¾ higher, and wheat was the only loser. It was 7¾ lower than what the March contract was. So we had a pretty good contract change here since March when you look at corn and beans.
And the corn pit, maize off the board, went down at 4.94¾. July picked up the pace at 4.95½. The beans, there's about a dime spread between those two that we have to worry about at all at this point or not?
Oh, I don't think so. I think that we're in a real interesting phase at this point in time, kind of a technical phase. When you look at corn, it's still trading below the long-term trend line from January. So we really need to have a close over 510 in July and 504 in December to get back on the uptrend swing. Argentina farmers aren't selling, so that supports corn. That's a good thing. But Argentina and Brazil corn crop is looking phenomenal. It looks like we could pick up another 78 million bushels down there. So you've got things that are good on one side and bad on the other. We've got rain, of course, which is preventing some of the finishing planting here, although guys I've been talking to up in the Dakotas and stuff are getting some things done. So we'll see. Beans, again, a technical picture. We bounced off the 10-day moving average at 14.69¼ today in July, and we've got short-term support basically around that 14.59 area. But to break out, we've got to close above 15.30 to get above that long-term trend line. So some real tough technical situations. November needs to close over 12.28 to get back above that trend line. So I think at the moment, this is very typical of a market at this particular time of year. Way too many things to focus on, especially when you have crop progress issues. And then you have all the other things that are going on besides.
Yeah, speaking of crop progress, most of the time when we think about the crop progress reports, either for corn or especially for the soybeans, we sometimes tend to forget about the Delta region. How are they doing?
We really do. I mean, all I hear people talking about is the northern bean states and how behind we are. But when you look at the top 10 bean-producing states in the Delta area, they've had the third best start since 1990 this year on bean planting. In fact, they're 7.2% ahead of last year. So, they produced 460 million bushels in 2013. I guess what it puts in the back of my mind is, could this and any imports from Brazil and Canada, hold down the old crop bean price? We had that situation when it came, when it came to the corn price last year when we expected it to go a lot higher. So it should be interesting, and to back that up, I talked to one of my clients today who processes about $20 million in beans in PA, and they're bringing Brazilian beans from Norfolk to north central Pennsylvania on rail.
Hey, I got a question about this. So when you say hold down the price of beans, do you mean right where it is at $15 instead of going to $16, $17, or $18 in old crop? So
yeah,
we kind of top it up because obviously they can ship beans in from South America and even rail them pretty far into the United States if they're going to Pennsylvania.
Well, that's right. I mean, I was shocked. I've talked to them about that option, and whether they were considering that option or not. And today when I talked with them, they definitely, they just... Local producers don't want to sell. They figure the price is going to go a lot higher, and so it now becomes advantageous for them to do it, and I think that, that chance is there. Exports tomorrow are going to give us another sign, did China buy any beans? They haven't been buying beans for weeks and weeks now, and do they have any more cancellations? Are we going to have another surprise Mexican cancellation like last week? I mean, that was a big shock. And there, too, you know, the corn crop is growing in South America. Well, the bean crop's growing, too. They figure by about 36 million bushels, you know, another million metric tons. I talked to Dr. Cornier yesterday, and he said with beans at $12 on May 1st, he thinks plantings for next year will go up in South America, or for this year will continue. They'll go up about 3 to 5%, where the USDA is only saying like 1 to 2%. So, and you know, China gave us a little hope today. You know, one of their large importers said there aren't going to be any more cancellations because they want to try and keep their relationship with processors. Aren't you shocked? At a cost of about $32 million to them, and that would be to the processor too. You know, and so. So I think that, you know, that's encouraging. Oil World said they think China's still going to import 1.7 million metric tons more beans than what the USDA is saying. You know, my biggest concern about China is just that the yuan is weak, and that means it's usually harder to get a letter of credit. But we'll see.
Yeah, a couple of other things. Let's bounce around the world. Ukraine, we're concerned about. But let's go with things we would be mostly concerned about year in and year out. How's their planting progress going for the spring grains?
Well, the reports that came out today is it's much better than we thought it was going to be. That they're 87% planted on all their spring grain intentions, and so that that certainly sounds encouraging and deflates some of the idea that they're not going to get it done. Now, we don't know how much, you know, fertilizer they put on, what kind of the seed quality they had, and we do know that, that you know, the fighting seems to be escalating, but they're trying to talk, but they didn't invite the insurgents who have declared independence to come to the talk. So that's a very inflammatory situation, and it definitely is on traders' minds.
Anything else across the grains, oil seeds, or agriculture you think we ought to take up?
Well, I think, you know, I talked last week with Dave when you were gone about that new port, Villa de Conte, on the Amazon that Bunky mm-hmm. put in. And, you know, they just shipped their first loads out of there a week ago. I thought it might be interesting to folks to know that there are 7 more commercials building in that general area, and they're investing about $6.2 billion. The effect of that port is supposed to speed delivery time to Europe by 20% and China by 15%. That's pretty significant. And, you know, they can handle Panamax ships, so it could eventually be the largest port in Brazil by the year 2020, which is really only not even six years away. And so a lot of interesting things going on. 2 years away from the Panama Canal being open, which is going to have a big impact on, like, Boston and these eastern harbors, they claim that the biggest ship that can go through there will be able to carry 14,000 20-foot containers. So that is a rather large ship.
And so they're widening the Panama Canal, and they'll be able to put bigger ships through the locks.
That's absolutely right. You can see pictures of it right now, which are really interesting. The people look like little tiny bugs down there at the very bottom. But it's going to change, you know, the entire picture. And when we look at wheat, you know, we did have some frost out in Nebraska last night.
Yeah.
And we do have, although it wasn't a killing frost, we do have precipitation in the forecast. And I think, you know, that's making things a little. My guys I talked to out there are. They're not thrilled, but they're not as unhappy as they were about a week ago. The winds have died down some, so the burning up from the winds, you know, they haven't had as much heat, but the wind has been the serious situation, and so it's going to be interesting. Got cattle on feed coming out Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Looking forward to that. 99% on feed, that's about 10.6 million head, so that's encouraging. Placements, 95.6 at 1.6 million heads, and marketings are expected to be about 97.6 at 1.7 million head. So we'll see once. You know, we continue to see beef and pork moving, and those are all good things for us.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
Hey, you too. That's Jackie Vanks. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Speaking of Friday, the Cattle on Feed Report is due out. Of course, that comes out at 2 o'clock Central Time, just before we start our show. We'll bring you those numbers. We'll review them again, I know, during Commodity Week. Our guest this week will be Jerry Gulke of the Gulke Group. He's a farmer and a commodity analyst. Jerry Gulke is our guest on Commodity Week. You can hear that online at willag.org by about 5 o'clock, rather 4 o'clock Central Time on Friday afternoon, or listen to it live immediately following the Closing Market Report. Comes up at 2:36 in the afternoon.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, every now and then I remind myself just to say thank you. Thank you very much for listening, because it means so very much to Dave and I that you do, and that you give, and that you support us, and that, in fact, we hope that we do a really good service for you. You can contact us anytime you'd like. My email address is tgleason@illinois.edu. That's pretty easy to remember. Or just call 217-333-7300. That's 217-333-7300, and you can ask for either Dave or myself. They'll put you right through to us. Thanks so much for listening. Speaking of Dave, he's here now with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, USDA chief economist Joseph Glauber has announced the May 31st retirement of USDA World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Gerald Bangy and the appointment of Seth Meyer as acting board chair. Meyer is currently a senior economist in the office of the chief economist, and he will assume his new duties on June 1st. Bangy has been responsible for the monthly forecasts of the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report and the Joint Agricultural Weather Facility. Prior to joining USDA, Meyer was an economist in the Economic and Social Development Department at the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization. A Senate Agriculture Committee hearing Tuesday on high-frequency trading discussed whether CFTC has the ability to keep up with the market's technology advancement. Ag Committee Chairman Debbie Stabenow says, quote, "For a 21st century market, we need a 21st century regulator. That means the CFTC needs the right authority and the right tools to ensure that markets are working." Tuesday's hearing was part of the committee's CFTC reauthorization effort. The House Ag Committee passed a CFTC reauthorization bill in April that would require a study on the impact of high-frequency trading on futures markets. John Deere & Company is reporting a 9.5% decline in second-quarter net income on lower demand for farming equipment. With farmer income projected to decline, Deere says sales of agriculture and turf equipment could fall about 7% this year. The company expects a 4% drop in equipment revenue for fiscal 2014. Net income fell to $980.7 million, or $2.65 a share, compared with $1.08 billion, or $2.76 per share, in the same quarter a year ago. Meanwhile, Smithfield Foods said its first quarter profit surged as the pork processor benefited from strong demand for fresh pork. Smithfield reported net income of $105.3 million, up from $18.2 million a year earlier. Sales rose 2.9% to $3.42 billion. Total pork sales, the biggest contributor to Smithfield's revenue, rose 5.5%, with fresh pork sales rising 17%. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You know, during the noon hour today, I listened to a Washington, D.C. press conference centered on the part of U.S. EPA's proposed RFS rules dealing with biomass-based diesel. Now, in our part of the world, that's diesel made from soybeans. The senators also took up the expiration of the biodiesel tax credit. It's included in the tax extender legislation now being discussed on the Hill because it's important to farmers. That one also happens to include the 179 provisions. The whole thing was a mess. Honestly, it's pretty easy for it to be a mess. I believe it boils down to a couple of items. First and foremost, the biodiesel producers, and by default their respective senators, want to maintain production and therefore jobs in each state. Extending the biodiesel tax credit will likely ensure that to be the case. Last year, biodiesel producers produced more gallons of the product than required by the RFS legislation, which guides renewable energy policies in the United States. It totaled about 1.7 billion gallons in 2013. This year, U.S. EPA has proposed setting the biomass-based diesel requirement at 1.28 billion gallons. That would be the same as last year's requirement. Still, that's actually above the RFS requirement as it came from Congress, which is just a billion gallons. Are you confused by the numbers yet? Well, the bottom line, I think, for those gathered in D.C. would have been extend the biodiesel credit and increase the requirement to 1.7 billion gallons, maybe 1.8. However, I don't think most of them could have told me the requirement for biodiesel or biomass-based diesel would have been above the goals set by Congress.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Let's check now what's happening in the cash grain market. On the phone line with us is Tara Dynas, formerly Oliver, there at the Andersons facility in Logansport, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Tara. How are you today?
Good afternoon. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm very, very well. Farmers done planting corn there, I suspect.
Yes, they are. Virtually all wrapped up and, you know, getting there on the beans, certainly just down to the last little bit to get in the ground.
Have they considered moving any grain back to you now that they're out of the field, or are they busy doing other things?
A little bit. You know, we have seen our receipts pick up here just over the past week, especially with the rain and not much field activity that can be done anywhere. We are seeing some heavier receipts, but most of it is just delivering on contracts that were previously made. Still very limited cash sales.
Yeah, that was my wonder whether there were any new sales or not, but you say no. What is
not
your basis
much.
Like at this point?
Well, we're at 8 under the July today, which is flat May through July into the ethanol plant here, and it feels like everybody's just kind of sitting tight to see when this producer liquidation comes. I think everybody knows there's still some corn in the bins. It's just a matter of when everybody decides to let it loose.
Oh, my, how time changes things. So now you're just waiting to force them to sell.
Exactly. Hopefully, if the board can cooperate, everybody seems to be a heck of a lot more interested when we're in the $5 price range rather than when you put a 4 in front of it.
Well, we'll see whether the $5 show up. You think it will?
I still think there's a little bit of opportunity here in the short term until we get really wrapped up with planning on a national scale, and then after that it probably tends to be a lot weaker as we move into the growing season.
How are soy producers feeling in the area? That's the processors, that is?
Certainly feeling a little bit nervous. I think everyone realizes that there's not very many beans out there. You can probably count on just, you know, one or two hands the amount of guys who are holding some beans in the countryside. So we've already heard of some local processors, you know, taking advantage of some of the importing and actually loading some offloading from barges and trucking some beans into this area.
And your bids for the day?
Cash price at Delphi tonight on corn is $4.78, at Climbers $4.87, and then cash beans at Delphi are $15.21.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Tara Dynas. She is with the Andersons there in Logansport, Indiana, located at the Climbers facility. Joins us on this Wednesday afternoon. Back in 2 minutes with the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Buttermilk Biscuit Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1686, Gabriel Fahrenheit was born. Fahrenheit was a German physicist who invented the Fahrenheit temperature scale thermometer. It was the first thermometer to use mercury instead of alcohol, which also extended the temperature range of thermometers. In 1853, Gale Borden applied for a patent for condensed milk. But it was not until the Civil War, when troops needed milk products that did not spoil, that condensed milk became popular. In 1919, Henry John Heinz died. Heinz was founder of the H.J. Heinz Company and creator of its slogan, 57 Varieties. Heinz was inspired by an advertisement he saw while riding on an elevated train in New York City of a shoe store boasting 21 styles.
Heinz picked 57, more or less, at random. In 1985, the first McDonald's restaurant in Des Plaines, Illinois, became the first fast food museum. And in 1994, the FDA announced that the Flavor Saver tomato, a biotech-developed food, was safe. It was the first time that a commercially grown, genetically engineered food was deemed safe for human consumption. But the Flavor Saver did not prove profitable due to the need for specialized harvest equipment and shipping crates. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated now on the phone line to take up the weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. Let's start right here in the Midwest. Tell me about the rainfall that has and has come across parts of the Corn Belt and what expectations we might have for the next week. First, please, Drew.
All right. Well, starting off here, we do have showers and thunderstorms that did move through the central parts of the Midwest last night, and we are going to see that repeated again as we go forward through this rest of the afternoon and overnight tonight as yet another disturbance comes northeastward out of Arkansas. It's already spread rain into a large part of the region. As we go through the rest of the day, it will go ahead and spread all the way up to the Great Lakes region. So for the next day and a half, we'll see additional rainfall across the central and eastern portions of the Midwest. As we get into the day on Thursday, we will find some drier conditions starting to occur. It'll take a little bit of time, but from southwest to northeast across the region, we'll see some drying tendencies. But it's probably not going to be very nice out there until sometime Friday or Saturday. We will still have a big pool of cool air right on top of us tomorrow and on into Friday, and there will be some instability showers that pop up even on Friday afternoon, so we won't be absolutely dry then. The showers that occur on Friday will be much, much lighter than the rain we'll see tonight and tomorrow. But nevertheless, we still won't be able to get into some fields for a little while because of that. The moisture certainly will be good for crop development in the long haul, however.
Do we get warmer next week?
Things do get a little bit better. We have a warm front that will be working its way across the Midwest as we finish out the weekend and into early next week. It will produce more rain for our neighbors to the north, unfortunately, as it moves across the region. And that additional precipitation will certainly delay some farming activity across the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, maybe some areas in northern Illinois as well. This will occur Sunday into Monday primarily. For those of us that are south of that area, we'll probably see very warm weather moving back into the region, warm and humid conditions. It'll be great for crop development. It'll also help to firm up the soil a little bit quicker and get us back into the fields for those areas that still have planting to do.
On the near term, you suggested some cooler temperatures. In fact, we're in the midst of those. Any concern for nighttime temperatures anywhere across the Midwest? I do see some 30s, but it doesn't look like it gets terribly cold.
Yeah, one of the keys to this is whether or not we can get the skies to completely clear off in the upper parts of the Midwest here tonight and tomorrow night. It looks a little bit questionable. I think some areas far removed from this part of the world, up in the eastern Dakotas and western Minnesota, I think temperatures will be cold enough for freezes to occur. But those areas are also the furthest behind in their planting, so I don't think there'll be any big impact. For the rest of us, a few upper 30s and 40s will occur, but don't think there'll be anything more than some patchy soft frost in some of the upper parts of the region, and certainly nothing that would threaten the success of this crop.
Other parts of the planet that you're concerned about or that might be having some really good weather?
Well, I think starting off with watching Russia once again. Another ridge of high pressure similar to that which occurred years ago. It started a series of dry years. It seems to be evolving right now across parts of their New Lands region. And that's impacting parts of Russia's winter and spring crop production region. It looks like it's going to get fairly warm and dry. They may lose a little yield potential in some of the winter crop, and it may firm up the soil enough to raise some concerns about spring wheat and sunseed planting in their New Lands region. So we'll continue to watch that rather closely. It is not a crisis today. It's just going to be getting rather dry over the next week, and we'll have to watch more closely after that. In China, conditions are absolutely perfect. They've been that way for several weeks, and they're going to have tremendous winter crops, so wheat and rapeseed in particular. Their summer crops are going to the ground faster than usual and getting established very well, and the outlook is just great for them. In Australia, it looks like they've had some timely rains in the wheat, barley, and canola production areas, and there is an aggressive attack going on right now for getting some of that crop in the ground, and they're going to have a week's worth of dry weather to help further that cause.
Hey, thanks so much, Drew.
Thank you, and have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner, of course, with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. You can always hear him again on our website at willag.org. Just look for the agricultural weather. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.